They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 250, The Great Detroit Bake Off. My name is Matthew Turner, alongside Ashley Soden. Ant is going to join us in just a moment, and we are joined by, from the Bucks UK, returning guest, Graham Reed. Graham, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I have to say, at this stage of the season, a lot better than expected. I have to own up to predicting seven wins this season at the start of the season in the club, but... Yeah, I've done a lot better than expected. I'll take it.
I mean, you weren't that far wrong either. It looked like even a few weeks ago that would basically be about right.
Yeah, a 5-1 finish to the season just turned that around. Yeah. We've been streaky this season. Got a good start and a bad middle portion, and then a fantastic finish. If you look at the detail, the last two games were pretty poor. We lost with a bad defeat to the Saints, and then we squeaked past the mighty Carolina Panthers 9-0 in the last game of the season to get to the playoffs. But I would say momentum is definitely on the up right now. To beat Philadelphia the way we did, albeit they're not that great at this point in time, but to steamroller them like we did was an absolute treat as one of my most hated teams.
Yes, I mean, if you're in the NFC, it's the Cowboys or the Eagles for me. Just for something about the NFC East, which is just ugh.
Yeah, well, that Cowboys, Eagles, and Bears—there you have them. My three most hated teams.
Love that. Because we have Graham for about now 25 minutes, half an hour, we're going to jump straight into just talking to Graham as opposed to going through the gump we normally go through. And then we're going to do that afterwards. So just getting straight into this, Tampa, they have won six of their last seven, which I think is the same stretch that Detroit have had coming into this. So two teams very much in form, as you've alluded to. And we played you in week six in a game that basically had no running attack whatsoever. You shut us down in that regard, which not a lot of teams have done this year. And we shut you down in that regard, which, I mean, your rushing attack is better than last year, which isn't saying much, but it's definitely there.
It's 32nd ranked in the NFL this year. And it's better than it was last year. Go figure.
That's fantastic. But it looks better. I mean, in the Eagles game, it looked fairly productive with a sharp white.
The season average was about 80 yards, and we gained about 115 in the Eagles game. But what the rushing game has done all season is just enough in each game to keep the defense honest. You know, it really has been Rashad White, as good as he is. There have been no running lanes for him. He's smashed into the line and gained 2 yards on first down, 3 yards, something like that, just enough to keep the defense honest, and it's opened up enough space for Baker to make some plays and win some games. But Rashad White, I remember when we drafted him and I was on your show, and your guys who were the college experts, you know, you guys know your stuff about college, said that you reckon Rashad White was one of the steals in the draft, because I think we had him in the second or third round, and he still has great potential. He's good. He's very good, but he has potential to be a real star, I think. If we can start opening up some running lanes for him, I think we've got a really good running game there.
I mean, if only you could have your starting centre play any of the season whatsoever, that might actually really help that. But with White, the thing that I love about him, in total stark contrast to our two running backs, is unlike him and also Pacheco from Kansas City, they're like the epitome of sort of angry runners. Like, they just look like they're running with attitude, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he got the Angry Run Award. I think he's done it a couple of times on Good Morning Football. And one of them was one of the games I was at in Munich last year when we beat Seattle, and he basically just stiff-armed the guy and knocked him, like, head over heels backwards and ran right over the top of him. It was phenomenal. He's a very, very strong guy. Very strong guy. Hard to bring down, but, you know, we always kind of joke amongst ourselves at the club. It's first down, run up the gut for 1 yard, you know.
We know it so well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a guaranteed yard. And actually, that might not be as silly as it sounds, because it's not -3 and -4 yards on first down. It's positive. It's usually a positive yardage situation, and it just keeps you moving. As I said at the start, it's just enough to keep moving you forward, keep the defence honest. But it's the potential with that. I think the offensive line is improving now, has been improving of late, and I think if we can develop some schemes to get Rashad in the open field, we've seen with as a third down back catching passes, he's run two, three touchdowns of 30-odd yards where he's caught a ball in the open field and just breezed past defenders, no problem. So I think already good. I mean, 1,500-plus yards, all-purpose yards this season. More to come from him.
Just looking at the way that this season has gone for you, I mean, week 12, you are 4-7 after a loss to the Colts, and yet you're here now, having beaten a team that you lost to earlier in the season, which is not a great omen for us, I would venture. What's been the sort of shift between who Tampa Bay were in the first half of the year to who they are right now? What is there any sort of big thing that's changed, or is it just better execution from the players on the field and nothing's really changed?
I think it's really difficult to tell. I don't think we can pinpoint one thing or another. I think certainly in terms of when you speak about playing a team a second time and listen closely, because it's going to happen this week as well. The year we won the Super Bowl, Kansas City blew us out at home at Raymond James Stadium during the regular season. Something like they were like 28 points up in the first quarter, and we beat them 31-9 or whatever it was in the Super Bowl, because we schemed them beautifully the second time. And I think we did the same with Philadelphia. Philly really blew us away. It was a closer score, I think 24-6, something like that, in the first game at Raymond James. And they really blew us away in that game. We were never at the races. But second time, we schemed them absolutely beautifully. And I think the biggest thing we have, and people have been quick to jump up at the head coach, Todd Bowles, but his defensive scheming is absolutely fantastic. It's really second to none, is a phrase that's used often. But I think he's a guy who looks at a game, and then, you know, if you're playing that same team again, he knows how he's going to beat them. So I'm hoping that's going to be the case this week as well.
And what a revelation Baker Mayfield has been for your team. I mean, you expected 7 wins. And yeah. I would venture that there's a reason why you thought there was going to be 7 wins. And if you have a look at Baker and what he's been over the last 18 months before this season, I think that 7 might have been seen as fairly optimistic. I think the last time that we spoke to your colleague in the preview show, he was similar. And this would be a big surprise. But if you have a look at what he's doing, he's not quite back to his full self as he was in Cleveland at his best, but he's getting there.
Yeah. I mean, even now as we speak, he's injured. He's carrying 4 bruised ribs and a gammy ankle. And he went out with that on Sunday and played one of his best games. But I say at the start of every season, if we can keep our quarterback on his feet, you know, you'd like to think you've got a chance. But a big part of it, again, is just having a running game, as bad as it may seem. I think we had, our average was maybe 80 yards a game, but we got 80 yards in most games, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like a couple of 200-yard rushing games and then 30 yards the rest of the time. We always got something, and it was always just enough to keep the defensive side, the other team, honest and keep them kind of watching for the run.
And I mean,
just making enough space to go out and make some passes and make some plays, and he's done it.
I mean, just to have a look at you alluding to the rushing game again, in the stretch of games, including the Colts game, which you lost, but since then, rushing yards, 125, 128, 148, 99, 70, 57, 113, 119. So 5 out of the last 8, you've been above 100 yards. So 100 yards, maybe that is one of the reasons for the uptick, is that rushing game has got more productive over the year.
It is, but I mean, again, look at Rashad White's average. It's 3.6 yards or something over the season. It's not a lot. He plows into that line and gets a yard, you know, and then he gets 10 yards and then he gets 2 yards. It's that kind of, it's not one of those like, you know, Zeke Elliott type, you know, run for 20 yards, 30 yards. You know, it's not that. It's just not that running game. But he's done just enough. And it's I've always thought, as long as you keep the other team honest, you've got a chance. Yeah.
Turning attention to the defense, when we spoke with your, for some reason, Gary. I can't remember his name again. Sorry.
Gary.
Yes, when we spoke to him, he was cautious about your defense and basically said something along the lines of, it is what it is, and we'll hammer teams, or they'll find a way through it and they'll hammer us, because it's a high risk, high reward kind of style. And what do you make of what's happened? I mean, since then, is it, it's still that high blitzing style that we come to know?
At the time Gary was on, right about that time, we lost to the Houston Texans shootout. It was 39-37. It was a rookie record for CJ Stroud, something like 450 yards passing and 4 touchdowns and a perfect passer rating and all that nonsense. And again, we should never have lost, but defensively, we just didn't have it on the day. We couldn't find a way to stop them. But then you look at a lot of other games and you know, I mean, the perfect example against Philly last week, you know, we absolutely stifled them. I love watching Rondé Barber break down, and he broke down some of the schemes that we ran to basically force Hurts into hurrying his passes, you know, and he showed you this is what they did and this is how they did it. And you know, amazing. And again, it's down to Todd Bowles scheming. And I think we've got a lot of very good players. We've got younger, we've got much younger on defense and much quicker on defense. We've lost some of the older guys, and we've drafted really well this year and last year. I looked at the numbers. I think 14 of our draft picks in the last two seasons have contributed very, very well this season. So it says a lot that we've got a lot younger. And I see these guys start to make a difference, start to grow in confidence, get a lot more playing time. And I think that's making a difference. I think you're seeing guys like Kansi and Diaby, who were first and third round picks this year, making a big, big difference and getting pressure on the quarterbacks. So I think it's all beginning to kind of mesh a little bit defensively. I understand what Gary was saying. It was a bit streaky, a bit spotty. You weren't quite sure. And we always felt that if we got a lead, we went into a soft defensive mode far too early. And we gave up a lot of very easy yards, which let other teams into the game. But I choose this week to pick last weekend's game as the example. And that we stayed very, very tight. We stayed very hard. We played hard for the full game. You know, they only got one touchdown. We stopped the tush push, or whatever they call it, for the second time this season, albeit a bit of a face mask that went unnoticed by the referee, but we'll take that one. They don't come often. So I think defensively, we are on the up. I think we're good now. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely seems that way. Ash, do you have any questions before we go on to the actual matchups itself?
Yeah, so obviously you've probably seen from our defense the past 4 or 5 weeks, we seemingly have a receiver have a career day against us. Admittedly, those receivers being Justin Jefferson, CD Lamb, and the such. Obviously, you guys have got two really damn good receivers in Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. If you had to pick one right now, if I put you on the spot and said, you can guarantee one of them will go or have like 150 yards against the Lions, but the other one will only get like 50, 60, which one are you giving the all career game to, and which one are you sort of letting us stifle, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think the easy option there is to say Evans will go for 150, and Godwin's the workhorse who'll get, you know, he's the third down receiver who'll get a hard 7 or 8 yards on 3rd and 5, whereas Evans is the guy they kind of tend to go to for the deep ball on 1st or 2nd down. So that tends to be the way it works. But again, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Godwin went for 150, 60 yards in a game. So we've got two absolute studs. I mean, either of them could be first receiver for any team in the league. Well, virtually any team in the league, in my opinion. But I think Evans' record speaks for itself. He's so steady, so solid. You know, 10 consecutive seasons of 1,000 plus yards. He's durable. He's always there. You know, he doesn't miss many games, which says a lot for him. I think a lot of the other guys who could have done that have always had a season where they've been injured. Was the reason he didn't do it. So he's very durable, very good receiver. I think Evans is my man. Yeah, Mike Evans is the guy.
Yeah, he was a guy the Lions fans really wanted at the trade deadline because we thought that you were all going the way that you thought you were going at that time, and it's ended up not being that way. And he's another 1,000-yard season. So
yeah, I think the cry from most Buccaneer fans just now to Jason Light, the GM, is pay the man what he wants. Just pay the man, make him a Buccaneer for life. He should be. He really should be. We're playing with about $80 million of dead cap space this year. We're paying for the Super Bowl. So the fact that we've got younger and our young draftees are inputting so much into the team makes up, you know, counterbalances that fact. But Evans is the one who I think, you know, next year, whatever you pay him what he wants, I think just have him back.
So coming on to the matchup in general, have you seen much of the Lions this season? I mean, I know that you have a little bit of a soft spot for us generally, but obviously coming into this sort of game now, a bit more attention has been on us and the beating the Rams last week. What do you make of the matchup generally?
Well, I mean, the matchup, you look at the stats, right? On offense, Detroit ranked third against their 24th in total yards, second against their 17th in passing, fifth against their 32nd in rush, and fifth against their 20th in points. The matchup is just, we have no chance, you know, on offense. Offensively, that's just the way it matches up. The only place we match up on you is rush defense, where you guys are ranked second and we're ranked fifth. And I think you're ranked pretty low in pass defense and total yards as well. And giving up a lot of points for some reason. We're ranked sixth, you guys ranked 23rd. I don't know how that pans out with the rest of the figures. I don't know why. You're obviously your red zone defense is relatively speaking must be a bit soft. I've seen the Lions in a few games. I've watched I watched Hard Knocks stuff when they were on Hard Knocks. Yeah, I watched all that. Aidan Hutchinson doing his Billie Jean stuff and all that kind of, you know, all good fun. But you know, you got a real feel around Dan Campbell and the coaches that things were very much, and I think I said this last year or even the year before, that Detroit were a team on the up, and it's been a gradual progress. You know, and I hope you'll accept that when we beat you this weekend, it's still progress. You've got to the playoffs, you've won a game. And then next year can be your year for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's big chat, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. I was about to say, yeah, bro, you think you've beat us? Can you handle Detroit weather?
Did you see that interview? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I have mad respect for Todd Bowles for holding in the laughs and treating that. Obviously, it's then come out. We didn't then get the context. Obviously, the poor lady wasn't even a sports writer. It's because they syndicated, so they cut their sports division and sent this poor report. And obviously, she's just thinking what she thinks is insightful question, and it's just poor woman. But at the same time,
yeah, he said the 20 seconds from the bus into the stadium will be hard, but once we're in the stadium, it's a dome. I thought he was very magnanimous in he could have kind of cut her down, but yeah, that was funny.
Then Mike Tomlin just walked off.
Yeah, that was good. That was good, yeah. The matchup on paper, it favours Detroit, there's no doubt, and Detroit are a very strong team. We have just been patchy over the season. We have been streaky. You can just look at the early wins, the middle section when we lost a lot, and then finally winning a few games to get through to the playoffs. So we have been streaky. We're not that kind of solid base. But I think we have the playoff and Super Bowl experience. There's a lot of players in our team, in our squad, who have played in the Super Bowl, who have played the last 2 years as well in the playoffs. And Todd Bowles, I tell you what, you know, folk can say what they want about him. He's schemed the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. He schemed Philadelphia last week, took them apart, and I'll put my hat on him this year. this week. Yeah.
Well, coming on to like specific matchups across one side from the other, then it looks very much like if the rush defenses are great and the rush offenses are potentially going to have a tough time, exactly like last time.
Yeah.
So maybe it comes down to passing then. And yeah. Our passing game, Ash maybe doesn't agree. We'll come on to that in a second. But our passing offense, as you highlighted, second in total off in passing offense or whatever yeah. that is, pretty yeah. close to that. So we're fairly effective against that. Goff is up and down under pressure. Sometimes he looks like God's gift, and sometimes he'll have yeah. a naught passer rating under pressure. So yeah. it's going to be a really interesting game on that side, and I don't know what's going to happen. If I remember rightly from week six, Lavonte David had an absolutely barnstorming game, even though it was 20-6. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, you know, with Baker cooking with your guys' offense, and our problem isn't red zone defense. Red zone defense is absolutely fine. Our problem is that we give up 40 and 50 yard touchdowns. So,
all oh, right, okay, cool.
So, yeah.
I'll take that. yeah, well, we had two of them last week, so you know we'll be looking for that. Yeah,
yeah. Let's just say my catchphrase on this podcast is: I'd rather be in a third and three than a third and 30, because it seems whenever in that situation we give up a big play, and it yeah. just pains me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that feeling. I think we have a hard job. We will have a hard job keeping your wide receivers in check. Not even just wide receivers. Actually, I was looking this afternoon. Your numbers 1, 2, and 3 in receptions. One's a wide receiver. One's a tight end, and the third one's a running back. Now that gives Detroit so many options that you know. That we have to be clued up on. We can't key in on the wide receivers because it could go to the tight end or the running back. So it's a great position to be in. So defensively, we're going to have to be very good, and it's all about pressure. And that's where Todd Bowles excels in his blitz schemes. He absolutely excels. And Rondé Barber broke down how we run normally a 3-4 defense, and against Philadelphia on, I think 15, 20 plays, we ran 4-4 and as a blitz package, and there were only three defensive backs, and we got enough pressure on Hurts that he just threw the ball away or threw it up in the air or, you know, an uncatchable ball. So I think we will see a lot of these blitz packages coming, and it's how Goff deals with that, I think, will probably be what the big key to the game. If you guys get into an early lead, I think we'll probably struggle when you guys can key in on a pass, when you guys can have, you know, go after Baker. He may not be baking for long.
Ash, I know you had a few fluffy questions that you potentially had.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, first I was just going to dip back to the whole thing about the run game. I want to put a slight, I know that we Lions fans hate asterisks, but I have to put one about the run game against you guys in the season.
Yeah.
It didn't help the fact that David Montgomery bruised his ribs on his sixth touch in the game, so he went out, and we had Jar not fully up to speed, so we were running Craig Reynolds. Monty's back, and he's back on form. Just look at that missed tackle he had on that last drive. And Jar, well, one of two rookies for us to get over 1,000 scrimmage yards and 10 touchdowns this season. So maybe, just maybe, it might be a different story for our run offense versus your run defense this week, but who knows? But yeah, to be the fluffy question, if I could, again, it's one of those where, like, you've got McGinty head, if you could pick one books player to interview for your podcast, like, sort of, and you can give whatever reason, maybe it's the best personality or you've got like something, a close personal connection to them that maybe intrigue you, who would you pick out of the books players to interview?
I think probably Mike Evans for me. Mike Evans is a really interesting guy. He gives away the ball after every touchdown. I don't know if you've seen some of the stuff that's been going on when he gave away, funny one, when he gave away Tom Brady's final touchdown yeah. pass. Yeah. The club, I think they ended up having to pay about 50 grand or something to get it back yeah. off the guy. It was ridiculous. But Evans is a really good guy. He's got a great foundation. He puts a lot of effort into the local community. He's a great football player. He's a great Buccaneer. And these guys are few and far between, but probably between him and Lavonte David, to be fair. But, you know, Lavonte's been there a long time, but Mike too. Mike's probably my favourite guy just now. My favourite all time is this guy, Mike Allstott. I wore this especially because the last time we played you guys in the playoffs, Allstott ran in a touchdown that finished off the game. 20-0, I think the score was. That was back in the 90s. That was the 90s. That was before you guys were even born. I mean,
I should know. I think it's, wasn't it on your Super Bowl run in the 2000s?
No, I don't think so, because I'm pretty sure, it might have been, I thought it was in the old sombrero, but I could be wrong. It was about late 90s, I think. You'll tell me the answer anyway.
it's one of my favorites.
We had one question from the chat, and then I'm just going to ask you about Bucks UK. And the question was about Baker Mayfield, and it's from Lost Oceans, who just says, Baker's definitely played his way into a long-term deal. What sort of deal are you willing to give him? Are you willing to give him a deal at all? I mean, you may not agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the money's right, we pay it. But it has to be right for the club, for the team, as well as for Baker. And he's certainly showcased himself this season. He's shown everyone what he can do. What he's saying in the background is, what we're hearing is that he's very happy in Tampa Bay. He thinks the situation suits him. The team suits him. The way they play suits him. So, you know, we hope that we get a little bit of a discount on that. But you're probably looking at upwards of $20 million for a guy like that. I mean, we only paid Brady $25 million a year because he just wanted another Super Bowl ring. So he was willing to take the hit to land on a team that could give him that. I'd like to see him back. I think he's a good fit for the team. I think he is a good fit. So I would like to see him back, but I'll leave that to Jason Light and the powers that be to decide if we can afford them.
Fair.
Yep.
All right.
Oh, look, I found it. It's the 1997 playoff game. Exactly. So I was minus 1 year old.
Oh, Ash.
And the Lions leading passer was Frank Reich.
Oh, God. I was at least seven. So
at least seven.
I was not a fan of football at that time, but never mind. Okay.
I was mid 30s then, so there you go.
So Bucks UK, yes. Have you gone out to see any games this year as part of the club, and what's been happening?
I've not personally been to any games this season, but I think we've been represented as a club at most games. We're hearing that we're possibly going to be in one of the games over here next year, and it might be Germany, but we'll wait and see. So I would certainly like to go to that. Although I do have a date in Germany in June for the Euros, so I'll be over there for a couple of weeks for that. But the Bucks UK is 40 years old this year, and there's going to be next season. We're going to have a big kind of celebration in Tampa. So get anyone who's going to go over, try and get them all over for the one game, make a big deal of it. And we're going to do one big watch party rather than splitting it into two or three. I think we're going to do one big watch party somewhere next season to try and get everyone in. So big celebrations coming up for the 40th anniversary of the club. And we go from strength to strength. Memberships in the around 500 plus. So it's really good. It's a cracking club. So any Bucks fans out there, join us. It's good fun.
Sounds great. Okay, last thing we've got is, and we're not going to do this until the end of the show, but since you're going to be leaving in a minute, you've got to give us a score prediction, and then I'll let you know what we think at the end of it.
You know, of all the things that I wrote down to say, I didn't put a prediction. Can I give you about three different options?
Whatever you like.
Probably not. I've got to be positive. I'll take the positive option. I'll say that we managed to stifle Montgomery in the run game and we keep it close, and I'll take us for a 21-21.
Another one pointer for the Lions would be
I'm being kind to you, but I want to say 31-3, but that's not going to happen.
No, well, I mean, who knows? You never know. The strangest thing can happen. You blew away the Eagles and they beat you earlier in the year, so you've got previous. Right. we've come to the end of our time, Graham. So thank you so much again for joining us for, I think, your third or fourth appearance. It's always a joy to talk to you.
Thanks very much for having me, by the way. I really enjoyed coming on the show, and you go from strength to strength as a podcast and a show. So well done to you. Hats off. Oh,
thank you very much. Yeah, we're going to be in Detroit for the draft because it's in Detroit this year. So we're going to do something different compared to what we do normally. So we won't be live during it. But maybe we'll do something before it, so perhaps we'll talk to you in a few months' time.
Perfect, yeah, absolutely. And I wish you well on Sunday, but not too well. But
the same to you.
If you guys go through, then I hope you go all the way, at least to the Super Bowl anyway. I do hope you go all the way. As you said, I wouldn't call it a soft spot, but I have a lot of time for the Lions. I do like the Lions from the old NFC Central days. My hatred went as far as Chicago and to an extent Green Bay, but not so much Minnesota and Detroit. So I wish you well.
The old division rivalry rekindled. Thanks very much, Graham.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Cheers. Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right. We are going to kick off the show as normal from this point onwards. So we're going to be talking some news, and then we're going to be breaking down the Bucks in an updated fashion, although because we've done some of this already this year, we are going to gleam over some of it and get into the Philadelphia-Tampa Bay game in a bit more depth, because frankly, that's far more relevant than anything else we can talk about. So without further ado, please do come and join us on our Discord channel. It's a great place to be with lots of like-minded Lions fans. It's a supportive environment, win or lose. Link is in the chat right now. College Football Podcast, it was just recorded before we came on. I'm pretty sure they did a Hula Bowl breakdown since the first of the All-Star games that happened for the smaller school people. So look out for that on your podcast feed, and I'm going to upload it to YouTube ASAP.
Yeah, it was a defensive side of the ball because I did offense last week. So you get to hear about one of my guys, Akeem Dent, free safety, because he was there. Don't really think he balled out though, so I'm a bit sad.
Please don't forget to like the show, sub to the podcast and all of that good stuff. Anything you guys can do for the small content creators that we are is much appreciated. And don't forget to add Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook group as well as Herman Moore's project to bring the best in Lions content creators together. It's facebook.com/groups/LionsNationUnite. We are Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized, and there's a tip jar down below. So if you like what you're listening to and you want to show some love, especially in this season of playoff joy, then that would be much appreciated, but there is no obligation. Just listening is good enough for us. And there's a feedback form in the YouTube description below as well. So if you have any thoughts for content, especially for this off-season coming up, it would be great to hear from you. News, Ash, as Lost Oceans is gifting 5 Tier 1 subs in the community to El Judderman, Dominic Snipes, Patman70, Bryce S2000, and Tara DC. Congratulations to you 5. Thank you to Lost Oceans for that. Much, much appreciated. That's awesome. Thank you. Roster news, Ash. Julian Aquara has been waived. He is no more. He is gone. He is dead. He is... I'm trying to do the dead parrot sketch thing, but I'm failing epically. And he has been replaced by the now finally activated James Houston, who comes off IR. He's been full practice now for almost a week and a half after being activated. His 21-day window was activated 21 days ago. They left up until the final few minutes before the deadline to activate him. What do you think, Ash, about this move? Because Julian's been a healthy scratch, but he was moderately productive when he played. Do you think that with an inactive player recently coming off, that this indicates that Houston is going to play on Sunday? Because they seemed down on that possibility only a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, so Julian wasn't active anyway. Obviously, he was inactive last week. I can see him playing, but again, I know I mentioned it on Monday, probably mostly just on obvious passing downs, because obviously I know he's had a couple of weeks now of full practices, but he hasn't really seen how his ankle's going to hold up in game time. And while this might not be the perfect game for him to sort of test it out, because obviously we go, as we'll mention in a bit, one of the best tackles in the league in Tristan Wirfs at left tackle, at least he'll get a chance to do it here. And as I know, obviously we're kind of poaching a bit from the Detroit Lions podcast, but Dr. Leal, who works for him, basically said he'll have to ramp it up. So luckily for us, if we get there, it seems he'll be back to full fitness, in inverted commas, for the Super Bowl. But I can see him maybe be active, get him some of those, even if it's like 5-10 snaps on obvious passing downs when you've got them into a third and long, if that happens. But other than that, I'm not really playing him because obviously he got injured on special teams against anyway. Plus, the reason he was getting so many snaps beforehand is because he needs to work on his run defense and coverage. Let's not risk him trying to upgrade those now. Just get him fully healthy, the pass rush, when we need him, because it's come out obviously this week with the full of stats. We led the league in pressures, but not in sacks. Now we need someone who can help convert those pressures into sacks. And he could be that guy like he was for us last year. But at the same time, we can't expect the world of a guy coming off a really bad injury and someone who the team was already sort of low on because they wanted him to take that next step and he never really did. So I've got my fingers crossed. Maybe he can make one or two big splash plays. But at the same time, if he doesn't really do anything, I'm not going to be too surprised.
I genuinely think he's going to need more time. And I think that Lions fans should be preparing themselves for him being inactive on Sunday. Yeah. If he is active, fantastic. But at this point, I don't think you wait this long to activate him until the very last moment if you aren't trying to give him as long as physically possible to prove his fitness. And if it's that borderline, maybe he just needs a little bit longer and they'd rather get rid of an inactive player and make Houston inactive because they think Houston has more upside for their future. And this is just thinking about the next couple of years rather than this weekend. Yeah. I think Brad Holmes is always thinking about all eventualities. And if Julian was never going to play, this is no loss. Yeah. So
exactly.
Let's see. So Big M has just said they wouldn't have activated him if he isn't ready. But as I'm just saying, if Julian's going to be inactive and Houston's going to be inactive, you haven't lost anything. Apart from the fact that if Houston plays next week, if we get through, then that is a big jump. Whereas Julian may not ever have played for the rest of this season. And in fact, if that's the case, I'm not really sure why he was here. But never mind. We have the injury report out, but I'll talk about that in just a moment. Head coaching interviews. Aaron Glenn has lots lined up, but nothing booked in that we know about. Whereas, Ash, Ben Johnson has Washington and Carolina on Friday and the Chargers and the Seahawks on Saturday. Now, these are virtual interviews. We're not sure actually how long they're going to be and how much prep Ben Johnson is going to do. He's come out and said this is coming out of family time and it's not coming out of preparation time for the game. That said, the amount of prep work that has to go into even one of these preparatory interviews is going to be extensive. You need to know what's going on with those teams. It's slightly concerning. I won't go full freak out mode because I don't think it's worthy of that. But the number of teams and the number of them scheduled is... he must be confident he can give the game plan enough time and do this. And I trust his judgment. At the same time, it gives me pause.
Yeah, so maybe something that helps him in terms of prep is the fact that of the four he's announced out of six, it's kind of interesting he hasn't announced when he's interviewing with the Titans, for example. Maybe he's showing a bit of, I don't say good judgment, because obviously he's choosing to interview with the Panthers, which is a dumb, dumb move. But the fact he's picking and choosing now, out of the four, three of them we've played this season. We've played Carolina, we've played LA, and we've played Seattle. That maybe gives them a bit of a head start in terms of that prep. And to be honest, I think with these prep interviews, it's more going to be a general philosophical thing, especially since I think it's only an hour you're allowed. It has to be over Zoom and that because it's before the divisional round, so you can't do in-person stuff yet. It's not going to be too impactful, as you said. It's going to be focused on the game plan, and it's happening Friday and Saturday, so Friday practices, from what I know, it's not a lot of actual like install stuff. It's actually more like special teams, general stuff like red zone that doesn't really need that much game plan. So maybe by then it's all installed. It's just execution stuff. So maybe it can get away with it. But the fact he's already come out and he said, okay, I'm interviewing these two teams then, these two teams then. And supposedly when he was asked about it, he was really excited about the Washington job. It does put a bit of cause for concern out there, because if he's really that excited and he's doing this, maybe is a few percentage more points more towards him potentially leaving. AG, not really saying where he's interviewing, but we know he is going to, especially I think he's getting heavily linked with the Titans job, though the Titans today have come out and said they're looking for head coaching experience already. So preferred kind of rules him out. But the fact he's sort of doing it more behind the scenes, we won't know until he interviews, is a bit better. And as I keep saying, I think he's going to make a damn good head coach, perhaps a better head coach than his defensive coordinator. So it's with him, it's good. Like, we knew it's going to happen. At least with Ben, we sort of can prepare ourselves because we know, oh, he's doing these teams then. We can prepare to go after them. With AG, we might suddenly get a graphic tweeted out in five minutes time. Like, oh yeah, from the Titans, we've completed an interview with Aaron Glenn, kind of like how the Chargers an hour and a half ago tweeted out a graphic that they've interviewed former Stanford head coach David Shaw, which took everyone a bit by shock because no one knew they were interviewing him. At least we've got sort of a bit of time to prepare ourselves for that eventuality rather than sitting there and suddenly in 10 minutes time we get a thing like, oh yeah, Ben Johnson, AG's interviewed for Seattle because I don't think he's actually been linked with them. We'll also be like, oh my God, where's that come from? We've already had that buffer to sort of say, okay, yeah, we know he's they're interested in him. That possibility's there rather than, I don't know if that what I've just said makes sense. I'm waffling now.
No. Yeah, that's fair enough. Let's get into this matchup in particular. So the Bucks, they are now 10-8 after winning their wildcard matchup. They won 6 of their last 7, as I said, when Graham was on. However, before that, they lost 6 of their last 7 after having a 3-1 start. Here are their victories. They started with at Vikings, and then they were versus Bears. They won at the Saints. They won versus Titans, versus Carolina, at Falcons, at Green Bay, versus Jacksonville, at Carolina, and versus Philadelphia. Their losses, the Philadelphia Eagles in week 3. Of course, they then went on to beat them in the wild card. They then lost to us in week 5. Then versus Atlanta, at Buffalo, at Houston, at San Francisco, at Indianapolis, and versus the New Orleans Saints. And I'm just going to stop here because, Ash, I'm going to put something out there. And I don't think it's particularly contentious. They've not beaten anyone good. And they've lost to everyone good. And a few bad.
Yeah, that's fair. Like, looking at it myself, perhaps the best team they've beat. Maybe it's home reason because obviously we're close to home to them. But it's the Vikings week 1, so when Kirk Cousins was, you know, he had a working ACL. And then Green Bay in the midst of their rejuvenation after they faced us in their own place and Thanksgiving and absolutely beat the brakes off us. Those are probably the two best ones. But yeah, other than that, like, Vikings, as we've seen this season, then maybe not all that. Like, Kirk Cousins is good, but there were some problems on that defense, especially early because they're installing a new scheme and Jordan Addison wasn't really there yet and Jefferson had a kind of slow start to the season. And then obviously with Green Bay, Joe Barry, that's all I've got to say, just Joe Barry. So yeah, I can completely agree. And yet they've lost to some bad teams. They lost to the Saints, who we absolutely trounced. And that was in Raymond James as well. So they split the series, but they won at the Superdome and then lost at Ray J, which is a bit interesting. They lost to, like, the Colts. At that point, Colts were starting Minshew. Giving it was like it was Richardson tearing them up because he's tearing them up and coming out of nowhere. It was against Gardner Minshew. I love Gardner Minshew to bits. It's a great story. He's a good QB. He's probably in that 30 to 36 range where he's probably just is good enough to be a backup.
Yeah.
No, they had to not really be. They're not really
like in terms of good teams they faced and the form they were in at the time. They lost to the Eagles, who are a good team. They lost to us. I think we're a good team. Yeah. They lost to the Bills. They lost to the Texans when they started getting hot. They lost to the 49ers. I don't think the Colts were that much, to be honest. And the Saints were hot and cold. But they lost to the Falcons, and they've been all year. They've lost to mainly strong teams, and then their wins. I mean, the Titans have been poor throughout this season. The Bears were poor to start this season. The Panthers, they swept, but they won by 3-9. They beat Atlanta, who were a bad team. The only one, the Jags were a really bad team when they played them. Yeah. The Eagles, the second time around last week, are a really bad team. The only team that I think were coming into form that they beat, apart from the Vikings in week one, as you mentioned, was the Green Bay Packers. Mm-hmm. And you've already said Joe Barry, yes. But Green Bay started cooking around that time. That's how they got in the playoffs. And they beat them in Lambeau, which should have buried Green Bay as well. So, you know, somehow they've been revived from the ashes. But I just feel like away from home, against a good team, that favours us just on matter of their schedule. And maybe momentum is a thing and six of their last seven you buy into. But the run has been favourable in terms of where the teams they've played have been in their respective seasons.
Yeah, like, I'm not trying to put anything against Tampa by obviously us pointing it out. But yeah, it's interesting to look at, because obviously you say, yeah, they're coming to form, but it's not like us where you look at the teams we've faced in our stretch and we've played some pretty damn good teams and beat them. Like, technically should have beat, I know obviously they got the brakes a bit off and by the Packers, so maybe it validates a bit what we're saying, but we should have beat Dallas, we beat Vikings twice, we've beaten a hot Rams team who were similar, kind of similar. So it's momentum, my old air for momentum, but yeah, it's just take it. I think we've got to take this momentum thing with a grain of salt for Tampa. While with us, we can kind of back it a bit more. I don't know. Like, at the same time, I know the Eagles, obviously, they got Matt Patricia'd. God help whoever hires that guy next, because he's been an offense coordinator, defense coordinator in back-to-back seasons, and neither are good. Like, what does he do other than just ride around on an ATV with a pencil behind his ear? Like, the Eagles have still got good players. Like, I know Jalen Hurts hurt. AJ Brown wasn't there. But still got damn good players on there. And yeah, Tampa beat them and got pressure on one of the best O-lines. That's the thing that perhaps scares me, because I've just seen it tweeted by PFF. The Tampa's, I think it was 11 unblocked pressures against Philadelphia was the most in the playoff game ever. If they could scheme that up against Philly, which is up there with our offensive line, as we heard with the 4-4 looks, they could kind of do it against us. We've seen Goff get better against the blitz this season, but I still have that Green Bay Bears stretch in my head where he just absolutely fell apart against pressure. So yeah, well, again, take Tampa with a grain of salt, their momentum and that. There is stuff from the past couple of weeks that maybe is cause concern, where you're like, okay, yeah, maybe they are figuring some stuff out to rectify the issues they had in the middle of the season where, yeah, they played some easy teams, got some easy wins, but yet also lost. Like, it's, as we'll come on to, there's good bits and bad bits to every team, and we match up quite well.
All right, coming on to this game in particular, the betting has this for the Lions, 6.5-point spread, 48.5 is the over-under. That means the Lions are 29-10 on, which means that translates to about minus 300. The Bucks are 47-20. That translates to about plus 260. The injury report has just come out for the Lions and for Tampa Bay. Slightly worrying news for the Lions is that Sam Laporta has gone from full to limited practice on Thursday. Of course, he is carrying that knee problem for which he'll be strapped up for the rest of the year. Fingers crossed that that is just them resting him a little bit and they limited him. But if he has slightly aggravated that injury, maybe he won't go this week. I'm not sure. Khalif Raymond remains, did not practice both days. The likelihood that he goes is low. Frank Ragnow didn't practice yesterday, but that was just rest. He is back for full practice today. Otherwise, the players that are designated are all full practice today. Brian Branch, James Houston, Kirby Joseph, and Brock Wright. Alex Anzalone was limited yesterday, but he is full practice today as well. For the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, some slightly worrying news for them is that Shaq Barrett with an ankle did not practice for both days, and neither did the running back Chase Edmonds. Now, Yaya Diaby and Chris Godwin, both of them didn't practice yesterday, but they were both limited today. I didn't actually tell our guessed that by mentioning Yaya Diaby and Kalijah Kansah, you'd hit on both of our draft crushes at those respective positions. Baker Mayfield is, of course, carrying his ankle and rib injuries, respectively, but is full practice both days and not expected to have a problem going into the game. For the injured reserve, we mentioned that Ryan Jensen, the center, hasn't played basically all year, and that's 2 years back-to-back for him now. So questions as to his long-term future with the team, given that he's been 2 years out, but he still remains a huge miss as one of the better centers in the NFL. And even though CD Juice thinks he'll be a problem in this game, wide receiver Russell Gage hasn't had a snap in this one. Sorry, were you going to reference that?
I was going to say, well, I'm sure that Russell Gage is a great QB thrown to him on the injury reserve, but you beat me to it. Yeah, sly dog.
Love it. Right. We're going to get into their starting team right now and their depth chart. The starting quarterback is Baker Mayfield. For whatever reason, if he aggravates that injury, the backup is the one and only Kyle Trask. Backing up him is the former playoff starter for the LA Rams, John Wolford, who Jared Goff, of course, knows very, very well. Running backs, Rashad White, Chase Edmonds, and Sean Tucker. Sean Tucker got a lot of love in the previous draft cycle.
Yeah, this draft cycle coming out of Syracuse. He is the infamous play, if you might remember. After every single game, he would tweet his stats. Let's just say in that last season, he wasn't very happy with his stats because Syracuse were crap.
Wide receivers are, of course, Mike Edwards and Chris Godwin, but Trey Palmer and David Moore came to play last week as well. And then behind them, Devin Tompkins and Rakeem Jarrett. Tight ends are Cade Otton, Co-Keeft, and Payne Durham. Payne Durham was one of my favorite tight ends in the draft, as well as I think he was yours. Cade Otton had himself a day. He was the leading receiver last week against the Philadelphia Eagles. Starting five offensive linemen from left to right, Tristan Wirfs, Aaron Stinney, Robert Hainsey, Cody Mulch, and Luke Gedecky, who Western Michigan fans will know well.
Central.
Damn it.
It was him and Brad Ryman, who now is the starting left tackle for the Colts.
Indeed. And they are backed up by Justin School, Matt Filer, Nick Leverett, and Brandon Walton. The defense starts up front in a base 3-4 with Kalijah Kansah, Vita Vea, and Logan Hall. They're backed up by Patrick O'Connor, Greg Gaines, and William Golston. The outside linebackers starters are Yaya Diaby and Shaq Barrett. Of course, they are both struggling with injury, but they're backed up by former first-round pick Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, Anthony Nelson, Marquise Watts, and Cam Gill. The inside linebackers are Devin White and Lavonte David, backed up by KJ Britt, Savosier Dennis, and JJ Russell. And then the back four, the cornerbacks, Jamel Dean and Carlson Davis, backed up by Zion McCollum, Christian Eisen, and Josh Hayes. And then the safeties, Ryan Neal, one of the best in the NFL, Antoine Winfield Jr., and they're backed up by Dee Delaney and Kayvon Merriweather. The kicker is Chase McLaughlin, who I think is one of the best in the NFL, personally. He has his up and downs, but he's a damn good kicker. Punters Jake Kamada, who I also really quite like. Returner for both punts and kickoffs is Devin Tompkins. The long snapper is Zach Triner. Ash, what do you make overall of this Tampa Bay team? Because for my money, I'm a bit of a fan. My opinion since week six has not changed about this team. I think that, frankly, the preseason predictions of them having 6, 7, 8 wins were remarkably low and predicated basically at reservations on the draft class and at quarterback.
For me, it's mostly the quarterback, because you've got to remember Baker, when he came into Tampa, was fighting with Kyle Trask for the starting job. And yes, I'm going to be biased. Kyle Trask, former Gator, so therefore I instantly hate him. He's not that good. He's really not that good. Like, he was decent in Florida.
No, he wasn't.
Exactly. Decent in inverted commas. He got stats, but that's because his defense couldn't stop shit in the SEC. Baker, we all knew he was going to win the job. It was just a few of the injuries as well, causing some issues. Obviously, Ryan Jensen getting injured, I think, in the preseason, kind of ruffled a couple of feathers. Obviously, Godwin was coming off a down season after having his ACL, so maybe some reservations there. And then obviously with the defense aging a bit, like I said, David, Shaq Barrett, Devin White not being that good, it's almost as if the sort of key pieces that made him really good in the Brady years were on that decline. So yeah, there was reservations about can the youngsters step up, and God have they. Like, Yaya Diaby's been, I know he's banged up with injury, he's been pretty damn good opposite Shaquille, taking over sort of Jason Pierre-Paul sort of role where Shaq is sort of like the speed rusher. Diaby, for his size, is a damn good power rusher. Like, really doing some stuff. Kalijah Kansi, kind of proving me right a tiny bit. I know obviously he was injured early in the season, but late in the season, he's finally got that game time. He's worked out how to translate that elite first step into the NFL. So, got some worries there, though. Last week's anything to go by, we shouldn't be worried about him because I absolutely love Kobe Turner as well, and Kobe Turner did shit against us on Sunday. So maybe Kansi's going to do the same, which will obviously pay me a bit, but at the same time, I want to win first. Savachi Dennis as well, perfect scheme fit for them. Just listened to Ann talk about him in the last year's draft cycle, one of the best blitzing linebackers in the draft cycle, coming out of Pitt with Kansi, so they know each other very well. And yeah, they've had some players step up to Eisen, UDFA this season, been a damn good slot corner for them. Like, I know I really liked him coming to week six, so he was a bit of a worry. And yeah, others like Cody Mounch, like, stepping in that right guard spot and making it his own. Gidecki developing from being the sort of project guy the year before. Obviously, we were all interested in him and maybe in the swing tackle role to being a really damn good right tackle. They've had the onward guys still keep where they are. And yet others, younger step up, like Kay Dotton. I didn't really like that much in the draft cycle. I preferred other tight ends, but he's been damn good. Everyone that they could have needed to step up has stepped up. Even Rakeem Jarrett and Devin Tompkins, guys you don't really care about. Like Rakeem Jarrett, really damn good in Maryland, a speedster with Tagovailoa's younger brother, Talia. But he racked up the stats in the Big Ten, but when it came to the big games against Michigan, Ohio State, didn't really do that much. He's had a role this year. So they've just had, rather than focusing on the key stars again, like Shaquille Barrett and that, everyone else has stepped up. It's kind of like how we said last week with the Rams defense, where it used to be the Aaron Donald, Von Miller and Jalen Ramsey show. Now it's a bit more spread out. Like the older guys don't have to take up so much of that weight, except for maybe David. He's probably the one veteran guy who's really had to shoulder some weight because Devin White, again, not that good. And Savachi and KJ Britt and JJ Russell haven't really played that many snaps. They're more role players. So he's the one guy you've sort of got to be wary of if he balls out on Sunday like he did against us in week six. It might make things a bit harder for us.
Yeah, it's one of those things. So let me just break down the teams in a bit more detail, and then maybe that will shine a light on what's going on here. But the team is ranked 22nd overall by PFF and 18th overall by DVOA. The offense is 19th by PFF, 20th by DVOA, 23rd on defense by PFF, but 14th on defense by DVOA. So there's the biggest difference, is that they disagree on how good this defense is. And actually, the longer that I've been doing this, the more that I tend to agree with DVOA than when there's been a bit of a difference on these things. I tend to think that defense is not good on a down-to-down basis, and that's why the overall ranking on PFF is down. But when it comes to money downs, blitzing on pass rushing downs, they're very, very good. And that's what ends drives. And the impact is not linear. PFF is a linear scale. DVOA is an impact scale. And so
This is not how I expected you to wade into the JJ Watt versus PFF debate. I did not expect such a backdoor way of you getting into that.
There we go.
Because if you see, I love that fact. PFF, I completely agree with you, because PFF, we've always got to bear in mind, PFF grades are subjective and they're not always going to be 100% right, because how can somebody sit in here like me? I admit, I'm going to put my hands up. I have applied to be a PFF grader before. How can I sit in here from my computer screen, know what a particular player is going to do on a particular play, especially on defense, where it's very hard to read exactly what coverage teams are in and what people's assignments are. So PFF grades are always going to be subjective. See, I completely agree with you. When it comes to stats, I weigh more for DVOA, like success rate, that kind of thing, rather than PFF grade. PFF grade's good as a introduction into player, but then yeah, you've got to dive down into the advanced stats. Like, for example, let's say with Baker, PSF, Baker, obviously saying it here, but one of the YouTubers I watch has done a video recently about how Jordan Love got a better PFF grade this season than CJ Stroud. And watching it, as someone, because he's someone that used to work for PFF, it's very illuminating in how it's actually easier with PFF for your bad plays weigh a lot more than the good plays. Yes. I think it's something, some positions you have to make three really damn good plays to outweigh one bad one, which is why players like linebackers, safeties, usually have lower grades because it's a lot easier for them to get a bad play than it is to make a good one.
Yeah, see, their game is about limiting mistakes, whereas wide receivers, tight ends, running backs, all about hitting home run plays. And so theirs weighs more on those individual plays. And so it's easier to hit them. Yep, absolutely agree with that. All right, the offense, statistically, Baker Mayfield, 364 of 566, 64.3% completion, 4,044 yards, 28 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, 94.6 passer rating, 54.4 QBR, PFF grade of 75.9. These are all statistically the regular season stats, I should point out, and not including the playoffs, because for reference splits them, and I'm not going to spend the time adding them up together, which is annoying, but never mind. Rashad White, 272 for 990 and 6 touchdowns, 64 of 70 in the passing game as well for 549 and 3 touchdowns. So he did break 1,500 all-purpose yards, as mentioned earlier. PFF grade of 68.3. Mike Evans, 79 of 136 for 1,255 and 13 touchdowns. PFF grade of 80.4. And Chris Godwin, slightly more receptions on slightly less targets, 83 on 130, but a lot less yards, 1,024, and a lot less touchdowns compared to Mike Evans, 2 for him. But a PFF grade of not much worse, 78.3, reflects their different positions, I think, with Mike Evans being primarily outside guy, and Chris Godwin versatile, should we say, mainly inside, some outside. Other good grades for this offense, at the tackles positions. Tristan Wirfs, 82.4. Luke Gadecki, 72.5. Let's see if you can spot a theme about where the other bad grades are. Stinney, guard, 55.1. Filer, guard, 54.7. Hainsey, center, 47.5. Moach, guard, 43.3. And K. Dotton, tight end, 54.7. Although I will point out, he almost had 100 receiving yards and blew the Philadelphia Eagles away last week. So I'm not going to rely entirely on that grade for on. In terms of efficiency, third down, they are 10th. Fourth down, they are second, but they've only tried 18 times on fourth down. In the red zone, they are 30th. 3-0, 22 touchdowns on 49 trips. Ash, I'm looking at this team and I'm thinking, this is basically exactly the same as in week 6. Strong in the tackles. Edges are going to have an interesting day. Pressure, if it's going to come, needs to come up the middle. And that means it's a lean season.
Yes. Lord, we love to be a lean. I completely agree. Like, as much as Rashad White is good, I have more than enough faith that we have to shut him down. Like, look at the past few, just look at this season. So, and I didn't even realize until after the game when I saw someone tweet out a chart on it. We have not allowed a running back to have more than 70 yards against us all season. No running back has faced us and got more than 70 yards this season. Obviously, I know we've given up some stinkers against some players in the running game, but that's always been rushing quarterbacks. We should be able to shut down their run game pretty handily. Fingers to cross, touch wood and all that. It is going to come down to stopping the receivers because, as we said, they could both easily go off. Evans, really good outside guy. God help Cam Sutton and Kendall Vildor this week because whoever's going to be against him, again, it's going to have a rough assignment. Godwin, on the other hand, especially since this has become more of this possession guy, the third down weapon, I have faith, more than enough faith in Branch to keep him in check, 60 yards probably max, but that could easily be with a touchdown, and maybe with one bullshit call thrown in. bullshit in reverse comments. He's probably going to get... I can see him getting a holding call against Godwin this week. Sort of being a bit crappy. But yeah. And then let's hope Houston coming back can have a good impact, because he's going up against one of the best left tackles in the league in Tristan Wirfs. The reason I'm saying he's going up against him is because he can't play against the right tackle with the way he plays. He needs to play on the left-hand side, otherwise he's just going to be nothing. So it's going to come down to, can Hutch work Kadeke enough to get sacks? And then can Aleem and Pascal and Kamish get pressure from the middle? Because we've shown it the past couple of weeks, we get pressure in the faces of QBs. They make bad plays. And as much as Baker is a good quarterback, was deserving a number one pick overall, though maybe that's not reflected as being... He's not a Stafford. When we put pressure in Baker's face, he's not going to be able to sidearm it past the pressure. He's going to panic. And we're going to hopefully get him down. We're going to flatten him like a overbaked bit of bread that just flops down. It is going to be the key matchups is going to, well, as we're going to come on to in a bit, is going to be Aleem versus probably Filer. Because I think Aleem's probably going to line up Shade more to the left to help whoever is facing Ruffs. Because imagine Filer getting overwhelmed by Aleem. They're going to sort of try and shade Ruffs that way, opening up hopefully stuff for Houston later in the game. So maybe I'm overthinking it with AG sort of game planning, because obviously we know he loves the secondary more. But I completely agree that is the key matchup for our defense versus their offense is the middle of that, our lines, the trenches. Pretty much as per usual.
And looking at the game in week 6, we had one sack, which was by Julian Aquara, who is obviously no longer with the team. There's really no stats that we got from the defensive line at all. The highest tackler on the defensive line was Aiden Hutchinson with 3. So it feels like our top tacklers, Anzalone, Campbell, with 9 and 7 respectively. It feels like a lot of the run game fills. We had a lot of success against their run game, came from the linebackers filling their gaps and us risking it with the pass over the top, and it was a very effective game plan. Don't expect that to change massively, but we'll come on to matchups in just a moment. Just on their offense, the wide receivers scare me. They do. Yeah. And Mayfield is firing, although we'll come on to the Philadelphia game. He gave them chances. And Philly didn't take them. And I think that's a really big difference in the game. Defensively, statistically, the leader in tackles is Lavonte David, the linebacker, the veteran. 5 passes defended and a forced fumble, 4.5 sacks, 134 tackles, 17 tackles for loss, 5 quarterback hits and a PFF grade of 71.5. Vita Vea did not play in week 6, like David Montgomery didn't play much of week 6. So that may be offsetting. He is the player that always has to be accounted for. 2 forced fumbles, 5.5 sacks, 43 tackles, 8 tackles for loss, 9 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 78.4. The leading sackmeister for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is Yaya Diaby, the outside linebacker. 1 forced fumble and 2 fumble recoveries, only 7.5 sacks, so they have not been that productive sack-wise, which is surprising given their high blitz mentality. 38 tackles for him, 12 tackles for loss, 8 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 63. The inside linebacker, Devin White, is the leading... I was going to say leading pass defender, but that's not true, and he's not the leading interceptor either, so I don't know why I listed him, but he is listed here, so I'll read it out. Devin White, 2 interceptions, 6 passes defended, 2.5 sacks, 83 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 9 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 46.8, bearing in mind that he has never been rated well, really, as a linebacker. This is an average year for him. And then Antoine Winfield Jr. is one of the best in the NFL at the safety position. He is the leading pass defender, 3 interceptions, 12 passes defended, 6 forced fumbles, 4 fumble recoveries, 6 sacks, 122 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 8 quarterback hits, and a team-leading PFF grade of 90.5. Other good grades in there not listed: Shaq Barrett, the outside linebacker, 74.8. Jamal Dean, the cornerback, 71.1. Other worst grades in there: cornerback Zion McCollum, 51.8. Defensive tackle Kalijah Kansi has come on recently, but he had a poor start. He's at 49.8. And the safety Ryan Neal, 49.7. In terms of efficiency on third down, they're 23rd. Fourth down, they're 14th. And in the red zone, they are third. So while they may be bad in red zone offense, they are very tight when it comes to red zone defense. Ash, this defense is who it is. But when you blitz as heavily as they do, you need good safeties and good defensive backs. And Winfield is the key that kind of keeps it all together back there, really.
He is. And I remember way back to week six, I guess Gary said Winfield does everything on that back end for them. And it's true. He is the versatile weapon. So I know, I think it was Carlton earlier asked, oh yeah, if they play that 4-4, look, who's going to be covering Amon-Ra? It's going to be Winfield. That guy can play safety. He can both free and strong. He can play core, outside corner, slot corner. I think he's even taken some linebacker snaps. He is basically their version of Brian Branch. Just he's a bit more developed because he's been in the league a few years. Like, I know he got snubbed from the Pro Bowl, and I completely agree to snub. He's one of the guys with Amon-Ra and with Quincy Williams, the Jets linebacker. Three players to be snubbed on the Pro Bowl who all got all pro votes. Amon-Ra, Winfield Jr. definitely both deserve it. As much as I like our safety room with Ify coming on, Kirby being absolutely what you can do, and CJGJ being, well, CD Juice, keep me to correct myself, him being the former interception leader in the year, I would happily trade CD Juice and Kirby if we could get Winfield Jr. on our team. He's that damn good. Like, there's a reason that PFF love him. He gets all the stats and he's just able to do everything. So he's going to be key piece. If we can keep the ball away from him and make plays against him, we should be good. But the fact that obviously the RB being really great, Kalijah Kansi coming on now, that's going to be an issue against our guards, because I know they had a bit of a better game last week. Can they keep it up? I don't know. Wait to be see that. Veya being back, hopefully Ragnar can handle him, because I know, I think it was AG said earlier that Ragnar is going to be the secret weapon against Tampa. Veya's why, because if you let him take over a game, especially that interior rush, we're done for. Goff, we saw last week when he got a bit of pressure on him. I know it was supposed to be a pass to Wright. That was a fumble. We were really damn lucky there. And if they can replicate that with Veya, with Kansi, we're in for a long time. And then obviously David's able to do everything. He can defend the pass. So he'll probably be going up against Laporta. But he's also defend the run. So again, inside runs with Monty might be a bit difficult. It might be time again to lean a bit on the outside zone, at least early. Get David and Devin White focused on that. Then you might have a bit of a lighter box to run it up the middle. It's going to be a matchup game. Again, it comes down to the interior of those lines and linebackers, who can win their matchups more. And honestly, aside from obviously our run game, I don't think this is much of a good matchup it is for us as it was the other way around, of our interior defensive line and linebackers versus their interior. This might be a bit more of a tough battle for us.
Yeah, I completely agree. We've got a really good question in, which I'm going to ask at the end of the show. But Ben Cohen, shout out to you for that, because I really like that idea. So let's go on to talking about the Philly-Tampa Bay game, because I think that really that is all important. That is how they're playing right now. You know, the previous weeks have come and gone, but last week is what they put on tape, and that is what, you know, they are probably going to show us, especially given what they're able to do to Philly, who are a team not built unlike us, at least in terms of offensive line and the number of weapons they have. Quarterbacks are obviously pretty different. Defensively, we've actually invested in linebacker, whereas they kind of have failed a little bit in that position. But, you know, there are certain similarities and differences. Anyway, on offense, Baker is just getting the ball out so quickly. And it is because the offensive line is struggling in pass protection. And I mean, I think that happened pretty much all game. Got sacked a couple of times. Eagles are obviously very good up front on their defensive line. But to counter that, Baker was dropping back exceptionally quickly. Like, he is urgent when it comes to dropping back, and it means that the timing is super quick. run game was pretty productive throughout. There were several drops by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which actually really could have made this a harder day for the Philadelphia Eagles. Evans dropped one which was about 50 yards and was perfectly thrown by Mayfield. You also had Cade Otton, who I said had a really big day, but he had a really big drop as well on a ball which was a bit of a piece of cake to catch, and he just had it go straight through his hands. Otherwise, as I said, struggles in pass protection. Sweat had a lovely sack versus the left tackle, who must have been Tristan Wirfs. Third and long, Baker was almost picked over the middle under pressure, just threw it straight to him. It was fired at him at short distance, but he got there to bat it and potentially could have caught it. Otherwise, there was a third and short later on, and Cunningham almost picked Mayfield again. That one was a bit easier, and Cunningham shouldn't have put that one down. Stinney got beaten by Williams inside on a third and one for a big sack. They went play action on third and one, and the guard just got beaten all ends up by Milton Williams, who, if you remember in the draft cycle, is basically, he's got the physical attributes of Aaron Donald. He's just not that productive, but that's what you're sort of talking about. Short arms, super quick, super strong sort of guy. I was a big fan of him. He's not really worked out, but he has started to do bits. Otherwise, just the touchdown to Godwin to mention. So you've got six men coming versus five. So there's going to be one unblocked. And the one that's unblocked is the inside linebacker who approaches the line of scrimmage and then blitzes through a gap between the center and the left guard. So Baker hasn't got a prayer, but instead of eating the sack, he realizes that it's a zero blitz. So it's one-on-one man coverage, which means if he chucks it up there, the DB isn't looking for the ball. So he throws it in the direction of Chris Godwin and he airballs it so that Godwin has enough time to get his head round and go and get the ball himself. It's a terrific heads-up play because he realizes what the coverage is and what that does to the DBs. And even though the coverage is fine, Godwin is just better at that sort of thing than the DB is going to be. It's a really good heads-up play, and we have brought pressure recently, and Mayfield has shown he's more than up against it. He got hammered in this game several times, hard, and he kept coming back. Ash, this offense was productive against a good defense that, you know, their tackling was atrocious on the day, Philadelphia, but their defensive line was fairly stout and brought pressure, and Mayfield stood in there and delivered in the biggest stage.
Yeah, and to be fair, it's kind of easy to when you know in your third and long and you know exactly what coverage they're running. Because if you listen to Tampa defenders at the end, your Tampa offensive players, they knew as soon as they went into third and long, Philadelphia running cover one. Does that sound familiar to anyone? The amount of times we played cover one man under Patricia, they're doing the exact same here, which is a bit concerning because guess what our favourite coverage is on third and longs? Cover one! Because we like to blitz a safety, which means the other one has to cover the entire back of the field. It's cover one. We get screwed in it. I am a bit worried about, again, use catchphrase, I'm a bit worried about the third and longs against Tampa because we saw last week they have the plays to beat it. Saw it with that unblock, the throw to Godwin, which is a lucky play, but Baker did the right thing, replaced the blitzer with the ball. I keep saying it works. It worked there. The third and long that they had as well earlier, they know what they're doing. But the issue for them is we're a bit better at actually turning over the ball than Philadelphia are. Philadelphia a down year for turnovers, which is why they traded for the Titans free safety at the trade deadline to try and force Kevin Byard to try and force some turnovers to generate a bit more. It hasn't worked well for us. We've developed in-house and we've created the ultimate safety weapon, Ife Melifonwu, who has forced those turnovers. Going to be a key guy, as we'll come on to later. He's one of the guys I'm going to be looking for to see what he does. And the one thing is, yeah, their defensive line's good and they got a run game going. I have better faith that we can stop the run because for the players that Philadelphia have, especially after they hired Patricia, they've just fell apart on defense while we're kind of getting better over time. Like, we had a really good start to the season. We dipped a bit, and now we're coming out of it. We are turning things around. I know we still give up all these big plays to one receiver. Evans is probably going to go off for 150 against us. But we should be able to handle everyone else pretty fairly well because we've done it consistently for the past 4 or 5 weeks. It is really going to be, how many big plays are we going to give up, and can they turn those big plays into touchdowns like the Rams did last week with Tutu out? Well, can they do that to us? And I don't know, is Baker Stafford, is Mike Evans is all good, but is Raheem Jarrett going to be Tutu out? Well, I don't know. So while this definitely caused concern from this Tampa offense for us on Sunday, I have considered what I've seen, what we did last week to LA, I have a bit of faith that we should be able to at least not make this a free score game in Tampa's favour like Philadelphia did.
I was very, very happy being someone who took Bucks 11 to win by 11 or more. That was particularly satisfying. My only regret was I didn't double it. On defense in this particular game, they were stout up front versus the run, and there's funky blitzes on passing downs. I mean, it's just what you come to expect from them by now. Another timely blitz on third and short. Philadelphia just has no answers for it. They can't seem to get where it's coming from. Coverage, even when they're bringing those blitzes, physical and sticky. They like to try and get away with as much as they can in terms of the little holds here and there. It's the game you have to play when you're going to be this aggressive. And you know what? If you give a hold up before the pass has gone and it's first down, but it's only 5 yards, I think sometimes you just have to accept that with what they do. Second down and 8, there was a play action pass to Devonta Smith deep. There was a lack of pressure on that particular rep, and the coverage was poor on the back end. It was about a 55-yarder down to the 5-yard line. There was a touchdown on that drive. But then, as we heard from Graham, they stopped the 2-point try on the tush push. So they actually went for one and got it. And then there was an offside on the kick. So they went for 2 from the 1-yard line and didn't get there. Kalijah Kansey, otherwise, he beat Cam Jurgens 1-on-1 for the sack. That was a really nice rep by Kansey. He does that sort of... It's a very James Houston-style kind of jump step.
Yeah, just a step, yeah. It was that, trust me, obviously it was his big fan coming to draft cycle, but seeing him do that for Pitt, it's just elite. Like, Jurgens is an athletic kind of guy. I know they drafted him as a center out of, I want to say, Nebraska a couple of years ago. Like, their entire interior offensive line is centers, because you've got Kelsey, who, depending on who you ask, has he ever retired or he hasn't yet, he's making that decision.
Nebraska Lincoln.
I'm good at this. Jurgens, obviously, former center out of Nebraska. And then their other guard is Landon Dickerson, a former center out of Alabama before that FSU. But that's why they have him there, because their centers are naturally athletic. They have to pull. When a got athletic guy like Cam Jurgens is getting beaten by Kansey, who is 2 inches shorter and has about 80 pounds less than him. No, not 80. About 40 pounds less than him, if that. That's a mismatch. And you saw it on that play. And it's, again, he might be going to pick, I think he's going to pick against Glasgow mostly in our matchup. That's a matchup I don't like, because Jonah's the athletic guard. Glasgow's a bit more stocky. I could see kind of rinsing Glasgow a bit.
Oh, no, I'm the other way around. I think Glasgow can get hands on him and stop him going. I think that actually, although Jonah's athletic, some of his problem has just been people going around him. So,
fair.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one to think of. But anyway, at this particular time in the game, so I was watching this 1.5 minutes into the second half. So it's basically a first half stat. This is how well Tampa Bay on defense were doing against Philadelphia. They said the average time to pressure for Philadelphia was 2 seconds. That's scary. Legitimately scary against an offensive line like the Philadelphia Eagles. Blitz was causing absolute havoc. The safety, their coverage was good, although they actually allowed Devonta Smith to get a bit of room. And Hurts just kept it and tried to make a play and ran into the end zone and got tackled. That was poor from both Philly and good by Tampa Bay. And then finally, Kansey, he was defending an RPO and managed to play both men really well. It ended up being a handoff to Swift, and he tackled him for a tackle for a loss. It's the sort of guy you're dealing with Kalijah. But all in all, it was a a really good day on both sides of the ball for Tampa Bay, as this has been shown by the score. The score doesn't really lie in this game. Moving on to the key matchups then for our game, you've got the Buccaneers run offense against the Lions run defense, and Ash, this feels like a mismatch.
It really does. Like, as we keep pointing, we've pointed out quite a few times at this podcast, it is very weighed heavily in our favour, which obviously reeks a bit of a trap game. But at the same time, I just have all the confidence. Like, if this Lions defense can do anything, it can stop the run. So as much as Rashad White's good, and I hope he has a good career overall, I can just see him not working against us on Sunday. Just not at all.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. I just think that this has been the point of emphasis for our team all season long. If we were to fail at this particular aspect against a team that has struggled all season with rushing, even though I'm a big fan of Rashad White, as you heard from Graham, there's no rushing lanes for him. It's not White's fault. I really think that we can give the Bucs offensive line in terms of the run game fits and bursts. So I think this is a big advantage for the Lions. Bucks passing offense against Lions passing defense. This, Ash, feels a little bit of a role reversal to me.
Yeah, it really does. Like, the one bad thing that really came out of the game against the Bucks earlier this season is that's the first time you really saw you can beat the Lions coverage deep. Evans and Godwin in that game were getting open. Baker just kept overthrowing them. If Baker was a bit more on target with some of those deep throws, it could have been a whole different game. And now this has really been found out. Like, so much so that obviously I've got my catchphrase now. If Baker can be on target on Sunday, it could be like that fourth quarter against Minnesota all over again. And the bad thing about that is it'll be an own home game, and it could maybe quieten the crowd. And as we saw against the Rams, the crowd is our secret weapon. Like, you got to, I think it was the fourth loudest stadium ever in NFL history. We need to repeat that on Sunday. And if the Bucs can hit some deep plays and score some touchdowns early, it can quieten the crowd and lets the Bucs into that a little bit more. And it just gives them that little bit more variance to maybe win the game. So that does scare me a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, the interesting thing is that in the most recent matchup, Evans was 3 of 7 for 48 and Godwin was 4 of 5 for 45 and a touchdown. They didn't even combine for 100 yards in this game, and they didn't have to because Cade Otton went 8 of 11 for 89, David Moore went 2 of 3 for 66 and a touchdown, and Trey Palmer 1 of 2 for 56 and a touchdown. So, I mean, that Trey Palmer touchdown for 56 yards, the David Moore touchdown for 44 yards, was egregiously bad tackling and just really bad angles by the Philadelphia defense. Even if we get burned deep, I don't expect our technique to be as bad as Philadelphia. So I think even if they do hit big plays, I would hope they don't go for touchdowns. Although I know that you've been having a big problem with the play calling in terms of safety help over the top. So yeah, I'll leave that and have it remain to be seen. In short, advantage Bucks passing offense. Lions run offense versus Bucks run defense. This, for me, is probably the closest one to call, Ash.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be I don't want to say neutral, but I can see both teams having a bit of give, especially if, as you said, I know it's a passing stat, but the fact that the Bucs got pressure within 2 seconds on the Eagles in the first half, I can see that working against our run game, if that makes sense, because we saw it with Dallas. Some of our runs, some of our run concepts, are very slow developing. We can't allow that to happen against the Bucs because they'll be able to, with the way they run blitz especially, they'll be able to sniff that out. So we shouldn't, hopefully, we won't be seeing a lot of these delayed handoffs, these traps and that take a couple of seconds to get going, because otherwise we're just going to get tackled for lost left, right and center. We need to be hand the ball off, find a hole, smash through it, both with Monty and Gibbs. Hell, if you really want to get a bit funky with it, maybe a handoff to Jason Kabinda or to Craig Reynolds, get them a couple of runs as well. Just really vary it with the run game so then they don't know what's going on, especially, obviously in this last game, we sort of went away from Monty in the second half, leaned on Gibbs, maybe because of game script, but just mix it up a bit more. So when whoever's in the backfield, the Bucs don't know what's happening. Like, we've seen quite a lot of snaps recently where Kabinda's on the field and it's been passing plays. Maybe use that against them, saying, they've seen game tap, like, oh, Kabinda's on there, motion him out to risk, like, tight end, like we did on that Sam Laporte touchdown last week that I've posted on TikTok today. Use recent game tendencies to open up stuff for us in the run game so they're a bit wary about run blitzing because, like, this could be a pass play. And then vice versa. Line up in what, obviously, I know it's kind of going into what we're going to discuss next, but line up in an obvious run formation and pass the ball. Just mix it up so they don't know what's going on. It makes them harder to choose their moments to blitz. Because that's the best thing about Todd Bowles, is he knows the exact perfect moment to blitz and the exact blitz to call. Mm. Make it harder for him to do that. Don't telegraph what's happening.
Yeah, it's a really interesting thing because when you've got a really blitz-heavy team like this, the tendency breaker is to do something like throw a screen. The problem with that is that they're exceptional at covering that while they're blitzing. And you saw Philadelphia fall victim to this a few times. They threw wide receiver screens to Smith or tight end screens to Goddard. And they were just blown up despite the fact that they were blitzing as well. So I think we need to be wary about that sort of thing. And I think we also need to be wary of gadget plays, kind of like what you were saying with handing it off to Kabinda. I kind of feel like that's going to get eaten alive and you're handing the ball off to people not used to being in that situation, who sometimes this is going to be a sort of instinct takes over sort of thing. And I'd rather have the ball in the hands of your playmakers rather than Jayton. And I think the thing about the Bucs is that they do what Aaron Glenn preaches in terms of dictating to the offense, which we really never have seemed to be able to master, even though it's what we wanted to do. And I think the only way to combat it is to try and retake the initiative and really hammer them. And so we talk about keys to victory in a bit, but one of the things I want to see is a lot more six linemen on the field than we would normally see for the Lions. Lots of big men up front are pulling guard and run with power through that sort of zone, I think, is going to be the order of the day, because if they come on a blitz and you're just running away from it and you've got four big men to run behind, I think that's going to work. Easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just make it simple.
Yeah, exactly. So I know last week we only had Skip for one play. He only had one play. And basically it was a really damn good play and I'm all here for it. 100% more of that. And the reason I said Kabinda early is because, especially on the fourth and like third and twos, I'd maybe use him there because we've been getting them on the field a lot for those to run block or to pass, like pass block. I can see us maybe, again, using the tendency breaker of on one of those, just hand the ball to him. Just run, hand the ball, run for, find the gap, just run up the gap, because it's something that they won't expect. Again, yeah, it might blow up in our face. And if it happens on some day and it happens and like doesn't work out and they get TFL, I'll hold my hands up like, okay, yeah, I was doing a dumb, but he's got to do more for us. There's a reason they activated him. And it can't just be because he's a really good special team player. He needs to do stuff other than be a decoy on offense. So I need him to... I know he's not going to catch a ball. He's already had his one catch for the season on week one. So it's got to be something else. So let's hopefully just hand him the ball and use his linebacker build just to go through like a B gap to get a first down. That's all I'm asking for him at this point. Like, we know he's not going to be like a... He's not going to be like Kyle Juszczyk. And his wife's definitely not going to be, because Kyle Juszczyk's wife... Damn, I need one of those jackets.
Yeah. The only other thing I'll say to end here, Vita Vea, and then we'll move on to the Lions passing offense versus the Bucs pass defense. Now, when they're blitzing, which is very often, it puts that Bucs pass defense under stress. And actually, we had no run play in week six, and Goff was surgical against the Bucs, and that's how we won the game. And that is, for me, Ash, how teams beat the Bucs, is having a calm quarterback versus pressure who can pick the right read at the right time. And for me, that's who Goff has been all season. Even in his worst moments, I think he's been okay at that. So for me, marginally, I'm going to call this in favour of the Lions.
Same, especially since, as we saw last week, Reynolds is getting up to speed again, which makes it a lot easier for us because now we have Amon-Ra is always going to be the perfect zone beater. We've seen it week in, week out for us. He always adjusts his routes to find the perfect holes in the zone and gets it. Having Reynolds up to speed gives us a dependable possession guy against man. And then obviously we've got the ultimate cheat code against man with J-Mo. Just look what happened week six when he was just coming off a gamble. He's obviously got the gambling suspension shortened, coming into the game with a couple, only like 1 week of practice. He burns them deep. Could happen again. So getting J-Mo involved, getting Reynolds involved, Amara's going to get his. I know obviously Laporte has been downgraded to limited today, though. Again, taking that with a pinch of salt there, because yesterday the full practice was an estimation because it was a walkthrough. Doesn't really count. Having him active, Brock Wright, having another week under his belt, he played a bit last week, did some stuff. We have enough to beat both kind of coverages, if that makes sense. If they run man against us, well, J-Mo and Reynolds are going to be there. They know how to operate against that. You run zone, well, we've got Laporta and we've got Amon-Ra. And then obviously we've got Monty, one of his best catches of the season last week, as you said, on that last drive, forcing Yeast to miss a tackle. And then Gibbs, man, you give him like a screen pattern. I know, said not doing screen, but Texas route, perfect. They blitz with Devin White, run a Texas route with Gibbs, right into that hole where White's blitzing from, probable touchdown.
I struggle with this so much because with Amon-Ra and J-Mo and what Reynolds did last week, I really feel like the Lions should have the advantage here. But with how Monty struggled in pass protection and actually how he's kind of struggled with it all year, and Gibbs isn't there with pass protection either, you're coming up against a team where a running back really needs to be good in pass protection to give Goff a chance. And it's one of the reasons why I think we might see a bit more Craig Reynolds than we're used to, because he's the best pass protector of the three. Other than that, I think that we're better than them. DB versus wide receiver tight end. Jamal Dean, great DB. I really like what he does. And Antoine Winfield is obviously fantastic. But put them on an island against these guys, and it just feels slightly unfair. It all comes down, as we were kind of saying when Graham was here, it comes down to Goff. He could panic under this sort of pressure because they're going to bring it, and he knows it's coming, so he's going to be expecting it. It's like, if you know a big hit is coming and you tense up, it's going to hurt a lot more. Whereas if you don't know it's coming, you kind of just absorb it because you're nice and loose. And Goff needs to stay loose and have no fear. I've got all the belief in the world in him. But he has put it on tape in the past where he can get flustered under this sort of thing. So would it surprise me if he absolutely melted down? No. This is the sort of team where it's going to happen against. Yeah. It's not going to happen against LA. They don't bring that sort of pressure. It's not going to happen against San Francisco. San Francisco is the last team it's going to happen against because they don't blitz. But Tampa like to bring everyone, and that's the sort of thing that Goff doesn't like.
See, you say that, I'm going to counter it in a good way first. I'm going to say the bad counter as well. We faced the Broncos and the Vikings twice in the past couple of weeks. Those are the two teams that blitz the most in the league. And Goff was pretty damn good against them. So I think he's really improved in against the blitz. So I have faith that we'll be able to handle it. So that's my good counter. The bad counter is you saying, unfortunately, I hate to rip on the guy. According to PFF grade, but there's also pass blocking efficiency into this. Craig is actually the worst of the three backs in pass protection.
Is he really?
So, yep. Craig has a 75% pass block efficiency. So on his 12 snaps, he's given up 5 pressures.
Wow.
For a 23.3 pass blocking grade. Gibbs is 87.2. So on his 39 pass blocking snaps, he's given up 10 pressures. And then Monty on his 55 has given up 8 for a 91% pass blocking efficiency. So
wow.
Monty's actually been the best pass block of the three, which is
but
surprising.
It was just last week where he got exposed a little bit. So,
but the concerning thing is they are three of our 5 worst pass blockers on the team, according to PFF. The other two are Jason Kabinda and Khalif.
I mean, like, at the end of the day, you're putting a running back against a much bigger, stronger player. They're on a hiding to nothing, so it doesn't surprise me those are the worst graded people. Anyway, let's get on to matchup thoughts, and we've kind of given a few of them already, but are there any other thoughts you have in terms of adjustments you'd like to see the Lions make in order to get a victory in this game?
I keep referencing it, and you know exactly what I'm going to say. When it comes down to the third downs, stop playing fucking cover one. I know it's going to stop. I know it's going to impact our blitz percentage, especially with the safeties. Play more cover two. We've seen last week what this team can do against cover one, and we've seen what happens to our team when we play cover one and third and longs. Receiver wins there, 1-1. They get open. It leads to a big play. I know, obviously, it doesn't make sense to use this coverage against them because they're the ones that invented it. I would love to see us run a lot more Tampa 2 on third downs. We have the corners for it. Sutton and Vildor, what their best qualities? Tackling short and run like that thing. Let them play Tampa 2. Play Tampa 2. Have them handle the short stuff. Have the safeties back. And then the linebackers and safeties and Branch can cover the middle of the field. I think it would be quite effective against this team. Yeah, Godwin might be able to get a few against us because he's very good against zone. But it will limit Mike Evans' impact on third downs, and it might limit the others. So that's the one adjustment I'm looking for. I know it's not going to happen because Glenn absolutely loves his cover ones and cover threes on third down. But if I was Glenn, that's what I would be doing, sort of going to more of those split shell safeties on third downs. It just gives the corners more protection because he's got to know by now that we're hiding to nothing on outside corner. Like, we're going to need at least two in the offseason. Make it easy for him. At this point, just make it easy for him. Limit the big plays. Yeah, you might get sliced and diced in the middle. Godwin might catch a slant that's for 5 yards and then go running through the zones and get a first down. But I'd rather give that up where it's a product of a good play from the opposition rather than, oh, Cam Sutton's got beat off the line again and now we've given up a 40-yard pass. So for me, it's more cover two, cover four on third downs to give the safety help.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, actually. It's interesting because Baker seems to have adjusted very well to throwing the ball quickly. And so maybe pressure doesn't work. Maybe the idea of just baiting him to a mistake by allowing him time has merit. But our coverage is not great. And allowing them time to throw and routes to develop doesn't seem like a great idea either. It's difficult. But I feel like the worst thing is just to try and do exactly what Philadelphia did because that got burned. Yeah. So maybe just a change of tact. Maybe having something up your sleeve as a change up in terms of pressure, but actually in sort of base third and long, not bringing as much pressure. Maybe faking the pressure and just having a lot of phantom pressures going on is more of the thing that you should be doing, really.
Or, I know Anzalone's been good at it early in the season. You've got Jack Campbell, who's got the body for it. Blitz linebackers. I know, obviously, blitzing, if he's been good this season, still do that in fits and bursts. But when it comes to these situations, they'll do it occasionally. But for the most part, back it off. Use the linebackers for that because Cade Otten, he got his against Philadelphia. But if you bring, let's say, Jack Campbell, you've still got Anzalone to cover him. And you've still got the safeties back. It just using the linebackers more because we sort of went away from that the past couple of weeks. I know it's because if he's coming to it, really. But there was a time, for, I think it was in the middle of the season, where Anzalone was just on a tear. He was getting he was our leading, I think it was just after the bye, the Raiders game for the next couple of weeks. I think he got a sack every single week on a blitz on a third down. Do that again. You went away from what worked. Bring that back. So yeah, maybe it's just me just copium again, thinking that might fix it. And it turns out, as you say, sort of baiting Baker into time actually will go against us, but at least it's doing something different rather than just, as you say, sticking to the same old thing that you've already seen doesn't work for us and didn't work last week against the team. Don't do the definition of insanity. Change it up. Be the change you want to see in the world, Aaron Glenn.
Yeah, on the offense, I've given myself away already. 6 offensive linemen. I'd like to see it around 25% of the snaps. And I know that seems pretty high. But when Khalif Raymond is trending to not play in this game, when Sam LaPorta is limited today, getting a 6th offensive lineman on there as a blocker, I feel like, is going to counteract LaPorta not being out there for as many snaps as we'd like him to see. Because I haven't seen much on James. Is James Mitchell still active?
He's IR.
He's IR. I thought he was. Oh, so it's Firkser, isn't it? So our fit tight ends at the moment are Brock Wright and Anthony Firkser. And you guys know I love Brock Wright. If you're a fan of this show for some time, you guys know what I think he can be in this league. But up to this point, given his injury this season, he's not where I want him to be. And Firkser is a reliable guy for tight end two, tight end three. But there's a reason that he was available for as long as he was, and then yeah. he was allowed to go onto our practice squad. Like, people didn't want to pick him up. So if tight ends are a struggle, strengthen your offensive line, try and give Goff a bit more time to throw, because you've got elite route runners or speed guys on your team, which means that you should be getting the separation, even if they have to only cover three guys instead of four. So give Goff a little bit more time. That's all I want to see. What about you, Ash? Anything from the offense that you would change?
Not really, just because everything I want to do against this Blitz-heavy team, stuff we already do in breaking routes, replace, again, it's one of my catchphrases, if they blitz, replace the blitzer with the ball. And that's where Alan Ra, hopefully Sam Laporte replays, but if not, Brock Wright. J-Mo maybe on some crossing routes. Just sort of get some inside stuff going where they have to think about, oh yeah, am I going to blitz Lavonte David on this play, or I'm going to keep him in to try and cover these in-breaking routes. But yeah, for the most part, it's just do what we're good at. Do what we're good at. Know what our strengths are and play to them. And I think it was Dan who said it yesterday in his press conference, but at the same time, don't be a sledgehammer against a steel door. If you try something and it doesn't work, so let's say, yeah, we try and get a bit fancy because Ben does his usual thing. He does every couple of weeks where we get into the red zone. He decides to, oh, yeah, this would be a good time to bring up this play that we've practiced twice in practice and might work. Don't do that. Please don't. Just don't go too vanilla, obviously, but just know where your strengths are and just play to them while also knowing their weaknesses, kind of thing.
So let's go on to the score prediction then, Ash. What do you think?
It's the same old, but I'm going to go 34-20 to the Lions like I have for the past 4 weeks, because for some reason, 20 seems to be a magic part of our defense. We've given up around that every single week. So I can see that happening. But at the same time, because the edge of the run, I can see us winning by a score or two, and to give away the article that's coming on Saturday, like it usually is. If Bucks make the mistake the Rams did of giving us the ball first, I'm pretty much guaranteeing the win, because we'll get a lead and we have the run offense to keep that going. So if we get the ball first, for either way, either we win the toss and get it that way, or they get it first, they win the toss and make the idiotic decision to defer to the second half, we win. Because we saw what happened with LA, we get the ball first, we're able to control the lead, that's it.
Yeah, I can't shake the idea that we're going to cover the spread. Ugh. But I kind of think it's going to be a lower scoring game than unlike the first game. Now, their offense is playing better than it was then. But so what? This is a game all on its own. I do think our run game has a slight improvement on last time. I think we only rushed for 40 yards in the game in week six. But even if we rush for a bit more, it means there's a lot of possessions, a lot of punting. I back our guy in that respect. Kamada's a really good punter, though. I'm gonna go 27-17, which, you know, puts a few touchdowns on the board for both teams. Limited number of field goals. I think that's going to be there or thereabouts. Highly acknowledge, though, that there's a good chance that the Lions don't make it in this game. And I think that Lions fans are underestimating this Bucks team. Much like a lot of people in the live chats right now have been saying, we're underestimating the Lions. Not we, as in this podcast, generally, but just that all Lions fans are underestimating the Lions. I think that's probably true as well. But any given Sunday, it can all happen. Yeah. The Lions fans have got to bring it. Try and make the game hard for Baker. Try and make them burn timeouts and all that sort of stuff, and just make changes at the line difficult for them. And let's see what we can do. And who knows who we'll be playing next week, should we get through it. We have one question which I actually want to address on this side of the recorded show before we move on to the post-show chat. And it's from Ben Cohen, I mentioned earlier. And he said, question for the podcast. Do you think even though this week is more important than last week, that there's also less pressure due to all that came in with the Rams. What do you think?
Yep. Put it simply, yeah. There was a lot riding last week. Not only the narratives that the media kept drumming up to divide our fans, as and quite eloquently put on Monday, but it's the fact we've got that we've got some of those like curses off our back now. We've won a playoff game. We've won off a playoff game at home for the first time in ages. The pressure is off now. We've done the bare, like, we've got those monkeys off our back now. Anything we're doing now is with house money. And again, I don't want to underestimate the Bucs, because obviously they're the fourth, they've won their division for a reason. The Bucs, to me, are a less scary team than the Rams were coming into the game last week. So for me, yeah, the pressure's almost off, because the players know now. They've broke, well, to use Penny Saul's quote, they've got the key in the door now. They've won that first playoff game. Now let's kick the fucker down. Whatever they do now, they could. I don't want to say they could go out and lose on Sunday, and I won't mind too much, because obviously I'll be upset that the fact that we could have made it further. But if we go out now, we've won that playoff game, and it's a foundation for next year where, yeah, we have a harder record. The lowest we can pick is 28th, because we'll be the most winning team of any team that loses this week. So we're picking 28 or higher. I've got faith that we'll be able to turn that around and still produce a winning season next year, probably win the North and be back here next year. And at least then we've got those games under our belt. Hutchinson's played a couple of playoffs games then. So is Kirby, Amon-Ra, all these players that haven't really sampled the playoffs, because loads of them haven't. Like CJGJ, CD Juice was there last year in the Super Bowl. Jake McQuaid, I think, has been to a Super Bowl with LA the first time. Other than that, it's not really players that have really been that deep in the playoffs. We'll have that pedigree to us now. So we'll be able to do it. So yeah, pressure's off for them now. It's just pin your ears back, whatever you do now, just play your best and anything can happen.
I think it's weird because I do think there is less pressure on the players. I don't think that translates to them playing better. I think this is a group of players that actually thrives under that pressure. So
the underdog,
I think that actually that played into their favour. Now, having the release of what happened last week, I'm not going to say they're going to relax and that's going to hurt them, because they know what this means and they all want to go and get a ring, and they'll feel the pressure internally, but they might feel the pressure release externally, and I'm interested to see the dynamic that happens with that. Undoubtedly, in terms of the most important players on the team, there was that pressure which is released. You cannot say otherwise. So I do agree with that. Right, that's going to do it for the recorded element of this show. We are going to be on YouTube and Twitch for a smidge longer. So if you want to see the extra time, come over to Rural Alliance UK on YouTube and Twitch for that. The live reaction show on Sunday is going to be live from 10 to 3 on Sunday, as we start 10 minutes before the kick. That's 10 to 8 UK time, 10 to 3 Eastern time. Review show will be Monday, win or lose, and the college football podcast will be coming up shortly on YouTube, and the audio podcast that was the Hula Bowl review and having a look at the defensive side of the ball for that game. So the All-Star Circuit is starting in view of Detroit 2024 for the draft. If you want to know a little bit more about the unheralded guys going to the draft, you need to listen to that episode. You can find us on our socials on Rural Alliance UK, on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group for worldwide fans on Facebook is Detroit Lions Fans UK, One Pride Worldwide. Talking about that group, if the Lions, and I stress if the Lions made the Super Bowl, and you are a fan who is UK-based or will be UK-based during the Super Bowl, we will be throwing a watch party if and only if the Lions make the Super Bowl. I'm not going to make the trip for the Super Bowl if the Lions are not in it. And I'm not going to go to the effort of arranging it if they're not in it. But if they are, I am looking into throwing an event in Birmingham, which is probably the most central city in England, in terms of all four corners of it being able to get to it easily. So, sorry to the Scottish brethren, but it's just too big a country to try and go further north than that. So that's happening. And of course, it means taking Monday off if you need to do that. But if you're interested, if you go to the Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide Facebook group, I'm going to be putting the event in there for expressions of interest, because I'm going to need to book the number of places that will be required for the place that we go to, wherever that is. If you're interested, go there, say hello, we'll sort something out. Otherwise, website rotluk.com. I might put an event in there as well, which just redirects to the Facebook group. Subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider if you like what you hear. If you don't worry about it. Otherwise, you know where to find us. You'll see Ash's preview article for this game on that website as well. Ash, thank you for doing this with me once again. And thank you to Graham for being a great guest at the top of the show. To you, dear listener, we're 1-0 in the playoffs. It's a 100% record this season. Let's keep it going. Good luck. Let's go, Lions. One pride.
One pride.